Survival in America is an economic tragedy.
I ended up losing my apartment. I got laid off in November.
Okay.
And I was just kind of walking through here, and I saw this one little spot with the swamp back there. It just looked like a really nice spot.
It's also a skill. This man speaks in a documentary about homelessness. There are dozens you can find on YouTube, voices of people struggling and sharing their skills. And from the perspective of people using their best survival skills to make it in America, what can you find to survive besides abandoned buildings, frightening government shelters, or public spaces? Where do you get your food?
Introducing the Grande Meal Deal from Taco Bell. A delicious burrito supreme, regular taco, medium drink, and crispers, all for $2.89.
At the low end of the income ladder, with food stamp supplements, there is plenty of food, it turns out.
First, there was the burger. Then came the cheeseburger. Then the double cheeseburger. And now Burger King introduces the bacon double cheeseburger.
If you have to forage at the bottom of the income ladder with no kitchen to prepare your own food, there are all kinds of options.
Phew. We make our cookies the way only Keebler elves can.
Give me the sunshine. Give me a doom. Give me something simple and true.
You're not you when you're hungry. Snickers satisfies.
Calories, calories everywhere, you might say, but barely a drop of nutrition.
Yeah. Oh. You know you want the luscious taste of McDonald's Big Mac. Add fries and a Coke for a deal that's irresistible. The extra value meal at McDonald's today.
You know you made me love you.
This reality that you're listening to there may be partly behind some startling new research on obesity. According to a study by Oxford University and Harvard Medical School, which will be published in the next issue of the Journal of Urban Studies, about a third of the homeless population in the United States is obese. And when we spoke yesterday with one of the co-authors of the study, Paul Montgomery, he described precisely this foraging for junk predicament for the homeless. Their very survival skills are potentially killing them because of the nature of the American processed food industry.
Homeless people will have access to fairly limited food, and what food they do have will be cheap and energy dense. So we're talking about things like pizza, baked goods, high carb, high fat. And the amount of exercise that you're likely to get will be typically pretty low. So there's likely to be quite a bit of weight gain.
It's Paul Montgomery, the author of a new study from Oxford University and the Harvard Medical School that suggests that a third of the homeless population in the United States is obese. Let's explore this. Joining us is Barbara DiPietro, a policy director at the National Healthcare for the Homeless Council. Also joining us is Andrea DeMink, founder and executive director of the Poor House, P-O-U-R, an organization in Indianapolis dedicated to providing services to homeless people. Barbara and Andrea, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having us.
So is it too much to say that the survival skills of the homeless in putting together meals for themselves and their family are potentially killing them based on the availability at the low end of the income ladder, Barbara?
I would say so, but I would be cautious not to indicate that this is the skills of people who are trying to make ends meet by living on virtually no income. We have nutritious food in this country that's not affordable to low-income populations.
Andrea DeMink, how do the people that you deal with get around this troubling predicament of junk food availability?
I don't know that they necessarily get around the problem. They definitely try by letting people know who are serving food that they are looking for healthier options, whole wheat bread, fruits and vegetables, things of that sort. But it's really challenging because they're really at the mercy of the people who are around them, who are providing the food for them.
And would you say it's beyond challenging that the deck is completely stacked against someone attempting, without a kitchen, without an ability to prepare their own food, to get nutritious meals for themselves and their family?
I would absolutely say so. The groups that come out that serve food to them, we often see that they're highly processed foods, non-perishable, things that they can carry with them for a long time. And even if they have food stamps or accessibility to go to a grocery store, they're going to have to get something that's, you know, that doesn't have to be refrigerated. So we're talking about canned items that are often high in sodium and saturated fats and things that are easy to just eat and take with them.
So, Andrea and Barbara, this idea that a third of the homeless population in the U.S. is going to be published with some hoopla in the Journal of Urban Studies next month, is no surprise to either of you.
No.
I was actually surprised it was only a third.
Now, that is shocking. Now, look, mm-hmm. when we talked about the vulnerability of poor babies back in the 70s and 80s, it was clear that the solution was to improve prenatal health for mothers and to get them nutritious sort of prenatal care so that those babies would be born in the best possible circumstances. That was clearly the policy directive. When we talk about dealing with poverty, we constantly talk about education. How come we've simply left the homeless in a situation that is absolutely unhealthy on so many levels?
Well, we have a systematic disinvestment in affordable housing in this country since the 1970s. So increasingly, when we talk about a homeless population, you're talking about the extremes of poverty. Minimum wage, you can't even make rent in most places in this country. If you're unemployed, increasingly those are difficult. So housing is really the solution behind many of these issues.
So, Andrea DeMink, is housing an enabler, a pathway to better nutrition for the people that you deal with, even sort of temporary housing and temporary facilities that could help in food preparation?
Absolutely, because I think that then we give choice back to people. They can make the choice to have nutritious food, to be able to prepare their own food, as opposed to being at the mercy of the people who are coming out and providing food for them or in the shelters. They would have access to refrigerators, stoves, to have the tools that they need to be able to prepare their own food and to live a healthy lifestyle.
Can you provide services like that and tell us a story of individuals who you've had an impact on?
Well, we definitely, when we first started working out on the streets, we're a street outreach, so we're not in a building. We noticed that when we would try to request that groups would make food for us, often the typical meal would be a bag with Vienna sausages, some cheese and peanut butter crackers, and oatmeal cream pie. That was really often the typical meal. And so we've been able to educate the people, at least for our organization, that are providing food, very specific directives about how we would like the food prepared, what type of food, and just letting them know that that folks who are living on the street, they already have enough challenges with health care and other issues, and so we can really make a difference in the food that we provide, even if it is only once a day.
Barbara DiPietro, is there a change of heart and of mind that needs to come from charitable organizations that supply food to the homeless to make sure that the food is a health input and not simply the easiest stuff that we can put in a bag?
I certainly would say so. I would also say that, according to a report from the U.S. Conference of Mayors, donations to food pantries and other charitable organizations are down in this economy, and those are not able to reach everyone who needs it. And I would also say that this is not simply a reliance on charity, but really looking at our safety net programs like food stamps and WIC and our other supports to really be able to give people the tools to provide good nutrition and make the good choices that Andrea was talking about.
Is there any government assessment before we go of what is the minimum sort of nutritional requirement for a vulnerable family, either in poverty or actually homeless in the individuals that you reach? Is there any sort of government sense of this is what you need and here is a program to get it for you? I know food stamps does that, but anything besides that, Barbara?
Well, highly dependent on someone's health. So if you have diabetes or hypertension, your dietary requirements are going to be different than someone else. The kinds of nutrition we're seeing exacerbates all manner of health care conditions, and that's driving worse health. And so I think that we really need to look at mechanisms to make food more affordable or, conversely, make incomes higher so that people can afford the food that's available.
I'll give you the last word, Andrea. Any notion of hope here?
I think that the tide is slowly turning, but it's going to take a while. And I think a lot of it is the mentality of the providers and just focusing on this as a core issue that needs to be addressed that really can make a difference in the overall quality of life that these folks are living, that it would help them to have more vision for their life if they physically feel better and nutritionally are feeling well.
Nutrition, a pathway for a better quality of life for the homeless. A third of them are obese. Studies will be republished in the next issue of the Journal of Urban Studies. Andrea Demink is founder and executive director of the Poor House, P-O-U-R, an organization in Indianapolis, and Barbara Pietro, policy director at the National Healthcare for the Homeless Council. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.